everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2021. Specifically, it's May 4th. So I'd like to say, may the 4th be with you, because you're listening to episode 234, which is a discussion about the new novel, Star Wars, The High Republic. On this episode, I'm joined by Cole Burgett, who is a recent seminary graduate and an author for the website Christ and Pop Culture. Cole has written an online exclusive book review of the new Star Wars novel for the Christian Research Journal. His review is called Happy and Glorious in the High Republic. And you can read his article at our website, equip.org, if you're a subscriber to our magazine. Now, these exclusive benefits for our subscribers, like access to these articles that are web exclusives, are specifically, as I said, for subscribers. And so to read this article, subscribe to our magazine at equip.org. Cole, it's good to have you on.
Well, thank you. It's always good to be here.
Well, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about the new Star Wars novel, The High Republic, and it's going to be spoiler-filled. So if you would like to read it, or you're not quite done reading it, you might want to set this aside and come back, unless you don't mind a spoiler-filled discussion. And so this is kind of, you know, if you're thinking about the Star Wars universe, this goes beyond where the movies were in terms of way back before all of that, kind of like in the golden age of the Jedi. So I just wanted to first, though, you know, wish Cole May 4th, happy May the 4th be with you. It's May 4th. It's all things Star Wars today. And we just want to talk a little bit about this particular book, but also something larger about the series. Now, we have evaluated the whole Star Wars universe. We have an article that is on our website that you can read for free about Star Wars, and it's by one of our longtime writers, Robert Velarde, and we also have a podcast on that if people want to go back and listen to kind of like, you know, the base of Star Wars, the movies that you're probably most familiar with. But I want to ask Cole, before we get started talking about this novel, what was your first exposure to Star Wars?
Well, Star Wars is one of the few series that I was really, really into as a kid. I mean, I had the action figures, the toy lightsabers. I played the video games. I read so many of what is now called the legend stories, or all the books that are outside of the Disney canon. And it's just really been one of the properties that has allowed me to establish friendships. My closest friends have always been, you know, Star Wars fanatics. And it's just an intellectual property that I still very much enjoy and I'm into, though my interest levels tend to fluctuate nowadays. That was, I guess, my first exposure, but it stuck with me because when I was a student at Moody, I think I might have mentioned this to you at another point in time, but it was actually my best friend who got me into like tabletop role-playing games. Through actually Star Wars, Fantasy Flight Star Wars. And as a result of running and playing that for goodness, several years, something like 6 years now, I have this one particular friend who is as much into Star Wars as I am. And he likes to say that having told our own stories in the Star Wars universe for so long that we're like these walking Star Wars encyclopedias. I suppose that's true to a degree. Now, I guess I should clarify that I've never been to a con of any sort or any kind of fan event. I've never dressed up or been to the Star Wars stuff at Disney World. So I'm not committed to it at, you know, at that level. But I do know quite a bit about it and enjoy the universe that George Lucas built. So to that end, I am very much indebted to the man.
Well, this is dating me, of course, because I am a Gen Xer, and so my favorite movie of all time is the original Star Wars film, which was Episode 4, as we now know it, A New Hope. And I saw that when I was a little kid in elementary school, 10 times in the movie theater. Now, I'm not sure. I think my parents like dropped me off with some friends or something, but that just really introduced me to my love of film, to see that movie. And it still sticks with me today. I think people debate which are the best of the films and rank them. That's a big hobby among some of the Star Wars fans. But for me, just for sentimental reasons, it will always be episode 4 is my favorite. So there is, you know, of course, we've talked about it on this podcast, quite a few different pop culture phenomenon series. I think, you know, for instance, film has really brought some of those things to the forefront. And it had, you know, done a few things here and there, maybe back in the 70s and 90s when we had, you know, Superman and the original Batman films before Christopher Nolan did them. So there's these various different pop culture phenomena like Marvel and so forth. But what makes Star Wars unique among them, if it is in fact unique? Now, it didn't have all the backstory, it was kind of its own movie in 1977. So it didn't have like the DC legacy of comics or the Marvel legacy. But besides that, what makes it kind of unique among all kinds of sci-fi out there, so much so that even people who aren't into Star Wars and sci-fi know what Star Wars is?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's kind of a wonder in the sense of how it really caught on, because it didn't have, you know, the lineage, so to speak. But I do think it is a very unique pop culture phenomenon, if that's what we want to call it. And, you know, I think that's because Star Wars is, for all intents and purposes, a modern mythology. The craze right now is comic book movies like Marvel and DC, you know, as you mentioned. And those characters, especially the DC characters like Superman and Batman, have a very serious longevity to them. They have this pedigree. But the modern superhero universe type movies that we think of when we tend to think of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the DC Extended Universe, which we've talked about before, those are very much a product of the 21st century. Yes, Marvel has produced something like twice as many movies as the Star Wars property, but Star Wars has been around since 1977. And though it drew inspiration from early pulp fiction serials and war stories, it was very much the creation of a single creative mind. And, you know, that was George Lucas. And in his biography by Del Pollack called Skywalking, which is a really fascinating look into the man's life and his films. I think that the full title is Skywalking, The Life and Films of George Lucas, or something like that. Lucas himself says that his intention behind Star Wars was this. He says, "I wanted to make a kid's film that would strengthen contemporary mythology and introduce a kind of basic morality." And in essence, that serves the same purpose as the fairy tales of old. And in that regard, I think the man succeeded in spades. And I think that's what draws people to the movies. It's kind of what makes it unique. I know quite a few people who like to harp on Lucas for his writing abilities. Maybe there's clunky dialogue, etc. But what I'm always reminding my friends who like to pick on that stuff is that the clumsiness of the storytelling, the seemingly clunkiness of it, that's just part of the genre, right? When you look at the way that mythologies function throughout history and are told, there is very little by way of logic. Things just happen. And things that seem coincidental in Greek mythology, for example, is just the result of fate. In Star Wars, it's just called the Force. There is no such thing as coincidence. There is the will of the Force in Star Wars. And all of those devices pull together into this great tapestry of modern mythopoeia or mythic storytelling. And it makes it very interesting for anyone who is a fan of the property, I think, because you find people who have wildly different notions of what Star Wars is and what it should be. And I know you and I have talked, you know, briefly in other capacities just about, you know, our different things that we like about Star Wars from generations, you know, apart. You mentioned seeing the original in theaters. Well, I just was never around then. I saw the prequels in theaters, you know, the trashy movies that nobody likes. those are what I grew up on. But we hear a lot today about Star Wars, especially in what is called, toxic fandoms, or these properties with lots of fans who are always sort of bickering back and forth about the stories within this particular universe. And I personally can never think of a time when Star Wars fans weren't pretty divided on their ideas of what Star Wars is. just as I think about it, the only truly unifying property that all of the fans who can at least remember it all rally around as being truly phenomenal is the that groundbreaking video game by BioWare called Knights of the Old Republic. And I think the reason everyone can land on that piece of Star Wars is because it's a video game that gave the player agency of choice. I mean, the entire game is built by and revolves around your decisions as the player. The story tailors itself to you, and the game world reacts to the decisions that you make. And so no matter what you bring to the table, the story told is uniquely yours. So by design, it's meant to please everyone, to let everyone experience a Star Wars story the way they want to experience it. And I say all of that to come back around to this idea of what makes Star Wars such a unique series, which is that it appeals to the most basic human attributes. And that's what mythology does. It speaks to the most common elements of human experience so that everyone can locate themselves in the story and the characters. It utilizes archetypes and storytelling, essentially painting characters and character development in broad strokes, so that just about anybody can find the story and the characters accessible at any age or stage of life. And that is why very different people with wildly different perspectives can all sort of come together around Star Wars and enjoy it for what it is. And so the thing that makes it so divisive is, ironically, the thing that ends up making it so unique as well.
Well, you're talking about Star Wars as kind of, like a modern pop culture mythology, and it's been said, and I think we do talk about it in our other article, May the Force Be With You, about the worldview of Star Wars, is that it was influenced, or George Lucas was influenced by Joseph Campbell, who was all about mythology. And that was his focus. And so just this idea of this pop culture mythology that people buy into, because, it could just be a nerd diversion, pastime, hobby that people are interested in, but it's kind of come to the forefront. And so that's why we're talking about it and talking about this new novel, because why should Christians pay attention to it at all? I think it has, penetrated a little bit more deeply with some of its mythological themes than other kind of series that are out there. And why is it important that Christians even care about Star Wars, even the ones who've never seen it? And I'm always shocked when I meet someone who's never even seen Star Wars, but there are some people that are out there. My kids know some people who've never, ever seen any Star Wars.
Yeah, that's actually kind of interesting. I don't know if I told you this, but there's a particular lady I know who was one of my teachers in school who had never seen Star Wars. And nowadays, I am your father, that everybody knows that line. They know the context. They know what's going on. And this lady, she was an older teacher, but she had come through, the 77 era, she just never seen it. She had just never seen Star Wars. And so one of the great things that I did with my best friend while an undergrad is we took this lady through the original six movies, but we did it chronologically in the sense that how Lucas wanted the story to be told. So we started with Episode 1. And, I Am Your Father is one of the great twists of all time in cinematic storytelling. And this lady, she approached it sort of already knowing who Vader was. And so for her, when she watched that scene, it had nothing to do with a twist, and it was all about the emotional weight of it hitting Luke. It was just very interesting to see someone who had never seen Star Wars watch it through Episodes 1 through 6. It was really kind of interesting. And she was one of our teachers, and we had a lot of great discussions about the story and Christianity and those matters. And it ties into your question here, which is a very interesting question. Why should Christians kind of pay attention to this? Well, you and I have talked in other podcasts about the importance of mythological storytelling. And it was the great conviction of C.S. Lewis, one of the great figures of 20th century Christianity, that mythology and fairy tales sort of, what he said is they baptized the imagination. Lewis had these fascinating ideas that I've spent quite a bit of my time in academia dealing with and thinking through. And his idea that it's ultimately the imagination that woos one to Christ. It's the imagination that has to be captured by the sweeping story of the gospel. It's really provocative. Those are really provocative ideas. And it's provocative because we live in a very modern era dominated by science and reason and rationale. And those aren't inherently bad things, but it has sort of conditioned us to only be able to accept certain things that we can give intellectual assent to based on evidence or what we can observe. This is why so many people refuse Christianity until they can see some kind of evidence like material gain, which we know is not biblical at all. It's also the reason that some people flock to Christianity because some people promise material gain. But the Christian walks by faith and not by sight. That is to say, the Christian doesn't go through life like the rest of the world, trusting only in their own mind, in their own reasoning, which the Bible tells us is flawed. We have to be renewed in our minds, recognizing what Christ has done for us with regard to righteousness and our standing with the Father, not material gain. You're not going to be able to apply the unassailable scientific method to faith. And that, for Lewis, is where imagination comes in so powerfully. He has these almost Platonic notions that there are certain truths that can only be grasped through metaphor and imagination. And the purpose of these mythologies and fairy tales, which, as Lucas himself says, instills this kind of basic morality, it primes one, Lewis will say, to receive the gospel when they hear it. Something I do for my closest friends when they have a kid, I send the kid a book. And it's a little book by R.C. Sproul called The Prince's Poison Cup. And it's a fairy tale about this prince who sacrifices himself to save his kingdom. And it's really just the story of Christ told a little differently. But I write in the cover of these books, "One day you'll be old enough to read fairy tales again," which is a line from the dedication that Lewis himself wrote in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe to his goddaughter, I think it was. And the idea there is that you read these stories and they capture your imagination as children. And then as you grow older, you begin to realize that the truths contained in those stories are the most true things you're ever going to encounter in life. Those morals are the most important things. And it primes you to receive the gospel when you hear about what Lewis called the true myth of Christianity, the myth that actually happened in history in the story of Christ. And so I think Christians, more than anyone, should be paying attention to these modern mythologies because of the way they imprint upon the minds of our children and shape us and our thinking in very important ways. Star Wars serves the same purpose as a modern fairy tale. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away is just Lucas's version of Once Upon a Time.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Cole Burgett, who has written an online exclusive book review of the new Star Wars novel for the Christian Research Journal. His online exclusive review is called Happy and Glorious in the High Republic. You can read it if you're a current subscriber, or to subscribe and read this article, please go to our website, equip.org. Now, I want to say thank you to everyone who has gone and given us a review or rating, but there's not that many of you, and I want to increase that number. So while you're thinking about it, could you please help us out a lot and help other people find this podcast by going to Apple Podcasts and rating or reviewing our podcast? You can give us a star rating, which is really fast. Or if you have a moment, just write a short 1 to 2 sentence review about the podcast so that other people can find this content and listen to it. The other way you can help us out is just by helping us to bring you this podcast by giving us a tip. And you can do that at our website, equip.org. Go to magazine at the drop-down menu. Go to Postmodern Realities Podcast. You will find at the landing page for this episode or any episode, there is a link where you can use it to tip us a small amount, like $3, $5, or $10. And of course, another great way to help us out is to subscribe to our magazine for $33.50 at equip.org. If you already own the magazine, you might want to gift a subscription to a friend or your pastor or another family member. And thank you for helping us bring this content to Christians around the world. I want to talk specifically more about some of the Star Wars content. And of course, in 2019, a couple of years ago, the main arc of the 9 movies that Lucas talked about, which I didn't know would ever happen in my lifetime, if I can be honest, it came to an end with The Rise of Skywalker, and I won't comment on that film. But looking at Star Wars as a whole, these 9 central movies, I mean, what do you think Star Wars is about and what is it trying to say? And I also want to tell our listeners that we have done some reviews of some of the last films. So we have something on The Last Jedi, and we do have something on The Rise of Skywalker. We don't review every single solitary Star Wars film or property that comes down the pike, but we have reviewed some of them. So I would commend you to those. You can find them and read them for free on our website at equip.org or listen to past podcasts about them. But anyway, just getting back to my question about that, like, what do you think about these 9 central movies, although they were done over such a long period of time, like 40 years, that it seems like, are they coherent? Do they tell a coherent story? Or at least there's threads through all of them, depending, like I said, on the fan who wants to rank them as to their importance or whether some of those films should be on a ranking at all.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this in particular, and I will be the first to say that I am one of the more forgiving film goers that I know. When I watch movies, unless it's usually like gratuitous something, I'm usually really forgiving. I can overlook. I try to give the filmmaker, the writers, the directors, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt and try to look at what they're trying to do than just kind of picking stuff apart. So couching my answer to this question in that, I think the first thing we have to do is accept the fact that the first 6 parts of this story were told by George Lucas. And the last 3 parts of the story, what you would call the ending, have been told by a different set of people, the next generation, so to speak. And I think it's important to recognize that because Lucas, though he didn't necessarily write every one of the Star Wars films he made, you know, the late pulp writer Leigh Brackett and Lawrence Kasdan wrote The Empire Strikes Back, for example. It was nonetheless Lucas's singular creative vision that permeated and formed those stories. So the actual source material, episodes 1 through 6, was the story that Lucas wanted to tell. And it's the story of this family called Skywalker. It's the story of this father's corruption and fall, and then his ultimate redemption by his son. What is very interesting in the sequel trilogy, you know, the ending, or the 3 most recent films that wrap up the story, is that it follows the next generation. And it really elevates, in one sense, the story beyond that of a father and son and makes it generational. It becomes about grandchildren and legacies. And, you know, everyone has an opinion on this, but I personally really sort of liked the way The Rise of Skywalker dealt with some of the broader themes of Star Wars. Luke tells Rey in that last movie, and this does tie into the High Republic, confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi. You know, it's ultimately fear that puts Anakin on the path to the dark side way back in episode 1. And when Rey, at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, finally confronts Palpatine, the great villain of the 9 films, she tells him, "All you want for me to do is hate you, but I won't, not even you." And she refuses to strike him down. And ultimately, Palpatine kills himself. You know, Anakin, back in episode 3, screams to Obi-Wan, you know, "I hate you." He gives in to his fear of losing those closest to him. And in doing so, he loses everything. He goes from fear to anger to hate and then causes great suffering, just like Yoda explains in episode 1. But with The Rise of Skywalker, you see the undoing of all of that. Rey has to confront her fear. She refuses to hate. And in doing so, she sacrifices herself. but is ultimately brought back to life by the redeemed Ben Solo, who fades away into the Force, thus ending the Skywalker lineage and restoring, you know, all things are right in the galaxy. And we can debate the quality of that last movie all we want, but I think on a plot and thematic level, I thought the movie was pure Star Wars. It really gets what the story is about. And so as a whole, you know, you can only look at the 9 films in relation to their ending, because that's where the point is. The point comes at the end. The story ends when the point is made. And the 9 films as a whole, and to me, it's the story of a family. And we trace that story across 3 generations, where we learn about the rise and fall and redemption of this family whose name is Skywalker, as they contend with this great and powerful evil called Palpatine. And the story begins with the fall of a Skywalker who joins a Palpatine in the darkness, and it ends with a redeemed Skywalker joining a redeemed Palpatine in the light. And there's a very beautiful kind of poetic symmetry to that. And that's ultimately what I think, from a plot perspective and a narrative thematic perspective, the movies are about.
Well, we want to get to the actual novel that kind of was the impetus for this podcast and the book review that Cole wrote for us. So this year, Disney and Lucasfilm, of course, Disney now owns Lucasfilm, have launched this new just kind of era of Star Wars, specifically storytelling through a series of novels that they'll be publishing. And we're talking about the first one in that series, The High Republic. So can you tell us a little bit something about this initiative and what it means for the future of Star Wars? And just to give some folks who have a, you know, basic knowledge of Star Wars, just kind of where The High Republic takes place, is it's before the very first film in the series that we just were talking about. So it's before The Phantom Menace. And if you go into any kind of like Star Wars wiki, it's at a time when the Jedi were flourishing. And I think one thing that has been characteristic of the 9 films is that the Jedi are in the wane. They're not this powerful force. They've been talked about of it in the past, but we don't ever see it in the films, really. Maybe in the first film, we see kind of some of the flourishing with a young Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn and so forth, but not at its height. And at its height, it was during this time called the High Republic. And then, just to give readers a kind of a timeline, I looked this up before we started talking, and this takes place about 700 years in Star Wars time from the birth of Yoda. So Yoda's been around, and he's around during this time. So Yoda's quite old. I don't know if they'll ever go that far back. But why don't you give us a little bit of a background on this series and what it's about and why they went back to before The Phantom Menace instead of like kind of maybe unpacking some of the time periods in between some of the arc of each of the three films.
Sure. So The High Republic is a new initiative by Lucasfilm and Disney that is primarily a publishing initiative, but from what I understand, it will lead into some television series down the road. And one of the things I've enjoyed following this project since it was announced a couple of years ago, I think it was announced originally under the title of Project Luminous, which comes from Yoda's line in the films. And one of the things I've enjoyed about it is that Lucasfilm and Disney have been very forthcoming with giving you a behind-the-scenes look at what went into the making of this initiative. So they're always posting interviews with the writers and the creators and that kind of thing with how they come up with this. And it's really sort of interesting, I think. Set 200 years before the first movie, so 700 years after the birth of Yoda, you're right, about 200 years before The Phantom Menace, episode 1, not the original 77 release, The High Republic is meant to show the Jedi in their prime. You're right, Yoda is quite old, but compared to where he is in the films, he's much younger here. And the Jedi are flourishing. Much of the galaxy is still unexplored, so it's this great era of exploration. The Jedi are not yet the jaded organization we see in the movies. You're absolutely right. By the time we get to the films, we find the Jedi as this sort of like a compromising organization. Lucas is actually quite subversive in how he tells his prequel stories with twisting expectations on their head. And the story the High Republic is telling is a time before that, where the Jedi are really great. And the creators have made quite a big deal about the line that Obi-Wan uses, Ben Kenobi uses in the original 1977 movie, when he first tells Luke about the Jedi being these guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy. And it was kind of the thing I think that everybody wanted to see in the prequels. You know, we go to these movies to see the Jedi doing Jedi stuff, and then we get there and they're not quite doing that. You know, we get a glimpse of it in episode 2, you know, on Geonosis in the Colosseum. But by and large, they're this jaded organization, this almost fearful organization that's a little suspicious of everything. And you know, they get baited into the Clone Wars very easily, and it becomes their undoing, and it's pretty dour. Not the High Republic. The High Republic, it seems to be here to remedy that. And there's very much a sense of excitement and adventure. It's almost like a blending of medieval fantasy with the Old West. And, you know, depending on how successful the initiative is, we'll probably be spending more time there in the future. I think right now it's something like 3 years worth of material is planned. But if it's popular, I'm sure that we will see it go on for much, much longer than that. And that's the general feeling or atmosphere surrounding the High Republic. It's the Jedi in their prime, when they're flourishing, being these guardians of peace and justice. They are connected to each other and the Force in ways that the Jedi or the movies really quite aren't. And it's just a very interesting and, you know, fun, kind of exciting take on Star Wars history. You asked about the in-betweens of the other three eras of Star Wars storytelling. And, you know, I think part of the reason they sort of skirted to somewhere else is because some of those stories have been told. I mean, we've sort of tracked the Clone Wars. It's a very wildly popular part of Star Wars through the animated series. Another animated series, Rebels, sort of begins to fill in some of the gaps between 3 and 4. We had Solo and Rogue One were both set during that time. The era between 6 and 7, that 30-year period, which is wildly unexplored. The Mandalorian is there. Several of the books, a really good book called Bloodline, featuring Leia, is set in that time period. So I think they're just keeping that for some of the more mainstream television series, things like that, because it's eras that people kind of recognize. They sort of can put it together. But for a publishing initiative, moving the timetable back to a period that is just unexplored, has never really been done in the newer canon, I think it's just creatively very freeing. I think it's a way of giving people and creators and writers a blank slate that people can come into without having to have prior knowledge of the story, and it's just a whole new means of being accessible to a whole different demographic, namely readers.
So in your book review, you talk about specifically fear and the unique role that it plays in the Star Wars universe. And that's, you know, if anyone's watched all the films, even if they haven't read the comics and seen the animated series, they know that that's something that's discussed in the films with regard to the nature of the Force itself, when you're talking about the light side and the dark side. And so in this novel, it seems to me that the High Republic is kind of trying to sort out what truly, you know, what does frighten the Jedi? What are they thinking? Because you really don't see that much in the films, but this one really explores some of the inner workings of each individual Jedi and how it is that they come to use the Force. You know, you don't have special effects to show you when you're talking about novels. And by the way, when we first discussed this project, I was expecting some like comic or graphic novel. I was really surprised to find out, no, it's an actual like substantial novel of more than 400 pages that I'm reading. So what do you think that the High Republic was actually trying to say about exploring these ideas as it relates to the Jedi?
Yeah, this is an interesting question. And we are still so early in the initiative. Kind of like I said, with regard to the films, you're never going to know the point of the story until you get to the end, because the story is going to end when the point's made. So it's still so early to nail down exactly what the creators and the writers are trying to do. But it's clear from the outset that fear plays a huge role in this. And I, you know, I, as I said, I think that's a key to the narrative of Star Wars proper and the films. And it interests me that they're sort of doubling down on it here, and they're dragging that back into the High Republic. So from just a plot perspective, we have these new villains, these space Vikings called the Nihil, and they have no loyalty to anyone. There's a lot of infighting even within their own ranks. And so you have the Jedi, who are very dedicated at this point to the Republic's ideas of unity and exploration and upholding goodness. And here you have these Marauders, who are basically anarchists, right? And loyal to no one. They have no loyalties anywhere. So there's an interesting parallel there, where you have the very loyal Jedi who are dedicated to the Republic, and you get this group of, you know, basically anarchists who come in causing a bunch of mayhem. But as we go beyond the initial book, and you read some of the comics and some of these other books, what you start to see is that there's a darker kind of evil at work. The Nihil are just they're almost like the vanguard. They're the first wave. And this darker kind of evil is called the Dringer, which is unlike anything we've ever seen before in Star Wars. You know, the greatest threat the Jedi ever faced in the old canon before Disney took over was, you know, really, you know, as much as it's debated, it's something called the Yuuzhan Vong, which was a something like a 30-book series that took place after Episode 6. You may remember some of these. They were wildly popular when they came out. And the Dringer are not the Vong. They're very different. The Dringer are these plant-based life forms who are steeped in the dark side of the Force, so powerful that even the Sith, the ancient enemies of the Jedi, tried to destroy them and they couldn't. So the Sith contained them on this planet. And in the High Republic, they are returning. The Dringer are coming back. And it looks like that's where the story is set up to go. So the Jedi will have to contend with them. What I think is interesting, however, as we talk about this notion of fear in the High Republic, I really don't know where they're going to go with it, how it's going to seep in. But what I think is very fascinating is we know how the Jedi story ends, because it's going to take us to the movies. And we know that in the end, they ultimately become crippled by their fear and they fall. So I think in terms of trying to figure out what truly scares the Jedi, the story of the High Republic is that we'll be seeing over the next few years of storytelling, we will be seeing just what it is that enfeebles the Jedi, what it is that cripples them. And I think these new villains, the Nihil and the Dringer, will all play a role in that. And, you know, ultimately it's going to lead to the return of the Sith, right? The great ancient enemies of the Jedi, the big villains of the movies, because we know they return. That's the first movie is the rumblings that the Sith have finally returned and the Jedi are, well, they don't believe it. And that's part of their problem.
Well, when I first opened up this novel, of course, I read the familiar long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But then there was just like this brief intro before the story starts where it kind of sets the page and it says this, quote, "The Force is with the galaxy. It is an era of ambition, of culture, of inclusion, of great works." And that word inclusion kind of caught my eye because there have been, you know, fans out there that have called for a more LGBTQ friendly approach to Star Wars. And definitely in the High Republic, we start to see some of these ideas working their way into the narrative. There's a couple that are two men, well, or two whatever species they are, that are married. And so given the history of Star Wars back, you know, like you said, George Lucas was trying to make kind of a more weighty fairy tale for children, you know, initially. And it's, you know, always been seen as kind of like, well, kids love Star Wars. It's a kid-friendly series. Should Christians be concerned about this, specifically parents, as they think about some of the newer elements that are going to be introduced? Like you said, we're back in the High Republic is, you know, not taking place in the same time period as the nine films. And, it, you know, it starts 150 years, the High Republic's 150 years before Anakin's even born.
Yeah, I think it's something that Christian parents especially should definitely be aware of, that it's there. by the same token, I really don't think this should surprise anybody at this point. I mean, this is Disney that we're talking about. We know what they stand for. We know what they're after. But I think one of the things I've said to you before is, you know, at the end of the day, Disney is never going to do anything that the ultra conservative censors on the other side of the planet can't very easily edit out to fit their sales margin. So I don't ever think that until the world, you know, shifts again, I don't think that this, you know, LGBT friendly stuff that is cropping up in Star Wars, I don't think it's ever going to come to the fore in the way that some, you know, probably uber fundamentalist Christians are sort of terrified will. Again, just because it's really not good for their sales. And that's ultimately, you know, what any business is going to be concerned about. But I do think Christian parents need to be aware that it's there, especially because the High Republic is marketing so much to children in some of their books. It's not just, you mentioned comics. There actually is a comics line. There's several comics lines. There's the main one, which is sort of, you know, mature teen and up. And then there's another one that's geared primarily toward younger audiences. And there are some books that are geared primarily toward younger audiences. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that inclusion is wrong, but if you do have Christian parents who are looking to educate their children on certain things very carefully, especially, you know, the things you see cropping up in, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, those types of things, then yeah, I think the Christian parents should be aware of it. They need to know that it is in there. And, you know, it could be an opportunity to talk about it with their kids. But one of the things I will say is it's done in a way that, at least from what I've seen, it's done in a way that I don't think is very overt. Again, you can debate whether that's because of the, you know, sales margin that they're trying to hit overseas or anything like that. But I don't think it's presented in a way that is demeaning to anyone who is a Christian or something like that. So if nothing else, I think the parents should be aware of it just as a means of having a conversation with their kid, if that's something they feel they should do. So it's there. We shouldn't be surprised it's there. It's only going to continue to be there and probably over time will become more prominent. But for now, it's just sort of loosely laced in there.
Now, earlier in this podcast, you talked about the power of myth and just even how one of the most well-known Christian apologists, C.S. Lewis, talked about that in his own work and used that in his own work as well. And so how should the Christian apologist think through some of the themes that are here? Or, you know, we're just talking about parents or Christian parents talk to their kids who are sci-fi and Star Wars fans about some of these things and how can they help point us to Christian and biblical truths or show us how biblical truths are different than what the spirituality of the Star Wars series is communicating?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have to understand really mythic storytelling, which we've talked about, and how it functions. It was Lewis's great conviction, as I've said, that Christianity is the true myth. It's the myth that happens in actual time and space and history. And all of the mythic themes, sacrifice, redemption, those kinds of things are part and parcel to the gospel story. It's the same thing with Star Wars. Redemption has always been a key tenet in the Star Wars narratives. Anakin's redemption, you know, Vader's redemption, I guess it would be more accurate. Vader's redemption from the dark side at the hands of Luke directly mirrors Ben Solo's redemption from the dark side, you know, through a combination of Leia reaching out to him and Rey and his memory of his father in The Rise of Skywalker. That idea of being redeemed, that no one is ever, you know, too far gone, is key to Star Wars. And, you know, there's a strong corollary there with the biblical narrative that anyone can come to faith. Anyone can believe on Christ. The gospel goes forth to everyone. So you find these kinds of corollaries in mythic storytelling, the themes of sacrifice, the heroic aspect of sacrifice and having the right motivations when one sacrifices for another. That's one of the things I know Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi was sort of really divisive. But that's one of the things, after you watch it and sort of think about it, that I really sort of ended up loving about his film. You have the scene where Finn, the character played by John Boyega, it sort of looks like all hope is lost. And sort of in this fit of anger, he's going to try to kill as many of the First Order as he can. He's going to sacrifice himself and kill as many of them as he can. And at the last minute, he's saved by the character of Rose Tico, played by Kelly Marie Tran. And what she tells him, it's a very profound line. She tells him, this is how we win, not by destroying what we hate, but by saving what we love. And at first he's angry with her for saving him. And her point there is not that, you know, sacrifice is terrible, because Holdo, the character of Holdo, had just sacrificed herself to save the resistance. Her point there is not that sacrifice is wrong. It's just that your motivations are everything. If you sacrifice yourself to kill what you hate, then you're no better than they are. So you find these little ends, these interesting ways of thinking that really do have some profound insight that really do sort of correlate with Christianity in some ways. And I'm not saying that you're going to be able to get to Jesus through Star Wars. I don't think you can. You get to Jesus through the gospel. What I am suggesting is that you can find a foothold to begin to talk about the gospel through something like Star Wars, through mythic storytelling. And that ultimately is what I think Lewis is driving at as well. Lewis, I think, would say there is no better foothold, there is no better doorway into the gospel than through mythic storytelling. And in, you know, modern culture and modern pop culture, you're not going to find a better doorway into talking about philosophy and theology than something like Star Wars, which is, you know, a modern mythology.
Well, given the acceleration of Disney films and this new novel series and kind of a reboot of the whole entire franchise and the world since they've purchased Star Wars, the future of Star Wars as a property, intellectual property, looks to be quite bright. So, of course, there's a bunch of TV series coming down the pike, specifically because The Mandalorian itself was so popular. It seems like it's going the way of Marvel too, which also Disney owns. They're just spinoffs of all these different kind of self-contained TV series. And so, you know, the books are being announced. There's a sequel coming out this June to the one that we're talking about, The High Republic. And these seem very different, like we talked about, from the films, different time period altogether. So what are your thoughts about the series, and what do you think these different venues and streams of where it's going will take the Star Wars fan, or even just someone getting into Star Wars? By the way, we talked about different properties, and Star Wars is bigger, you know, money-wise than Marvel, but it's not as big as Pokemon. And as far as I know, I don't think Disney owns Pokemon.
Yeah, as I said, I think they're kind of reserving the series for the in-betweens, the sort of the more tied to the movie stuff that we're general audiences would be more familiar with. But I do know there is a TV show that they've announced called The Acolyte that I'm really sort of intrigued by. And it, as from what I understand, I'm happy to be wrong on this, and you know, these things change in production. But from what I understand, the plan now is to have that series sort of end the High Republic era. It sort of begins and it connects the story of the High Republic to the story of Episode One. And I'm assuming it's probably going to be the show that shows the rise of the Sith in that regard. So I do think that the stories of the High Republic and the stories spinning out of what we know from the films, I do think it's ultimately heading toward this TV show format. As you mentioned, it's going the way of Marvel type thing. But I think that's where it's going, and I think those types of stories will serve to fill in the gaps between the movies and all of this new publishing initiative called The High Republic. And I think if they ever do decide to branch out into a really new era of Star Wars storytelling, they'll probably do it with new films, obviously new video games, which has a huge market that people really don't pay attention to. But is wildly popular today. So yeah, I think the future for content is bright. The quality of that content is up for grabs, but it certainly doesn't look like Star Wars is going away anytime soon.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Cole, but I'm going to call this the Star Wars edition, since it is May 4th. So, would you rather have R2-D2 as your co-pilot or BB-8?
That's a tough one. I feel inclined to say R2, but I don't know. I kind of think I would probably pick BB-8, to be honest.
Well, without wading into the whole controversy and just off the top of your head, what is your number one favorite Star Wars film out of the 9 films?
Oh my gosh, that question. You know, I knew this was coming and I knew you'd do this to me. You know, as far as a personal favorite, you know, I would probably have to say Revenge of the Sith. I really like the movie. I think I just think it's really well done. It has a great gravitas to it and importance. And I thought it was pretty good. So Revenge of the Sith.
And if you could live anywhere in the Star Wars universe, where would you enjoy living?
I can really nerd out on this one. Now I'll pick something familiar from the films. You know, probably indoor. The Ewoks are kind of cool and they seem like they'd be fun to hang around with. The forest moon of Endor. There we go. I'll be
precise. Right. The Endor moon. Well, I'm a city gal, so it'll have to be Coruscant for me. Right. So what character in the Star Wars series, in the films, that hasn't been fully explored in the films, would you like to see become more visible, maybe as they go forward in TV series and things like that, to bring them more into the pop zeitgeist, like, you know, Baby Yoda just kind of exploded on The Mandalorian. So who would you really like to see them kind of dig into their backstory?
This one is easy for me. Qui-Gon Jinn. I think Qui-Gon, just very briefly, I think Qui-Gon is arguably the most important character to Star Wars because his philosophy is the one that shapes the philosophy of the Skywalker family the rest of the movies. Everyone has to get to where Qui-Gon is when he dies. And he's the only one who finds a way to come back, to resurrect, as it were. And I think that's important. So easily, Qui-Gon Jinn. Easily.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast on May the 4th. It's Star Wars Day, and we've been talking about author Cole Burgett's online exclusive book review of the new Star Wars novel. His review is called Happy and Glorious in the High Republic. You can read his article. If you're a subscriber to our magazine and to subscribe, please go to our website, equip.org. This podcast has been brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. We'd like to connect to you, so please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man YouTube channel and join in the conversation in the comments section and in the live chat when we have premiere videos. Please follow the Bible Answer Man page on Facebook and on Twitter. You will find us at Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, Christian Research Institute, and Christian Research Journal, as well as on Instagram at the Bible Answer Man account. You won't want to miss every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern when we live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff at our website, equip.org. In addition, please subscribe to the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank gets out of the studio and into his study and engages in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. You'll want to head on over to equip.org because there you're going to find thousands of free resources for you in articles and past broadcasts, our podcasts, and videos. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute.